Fariba Hashtoudi was born in Tehran in 1951. Her father was a very well-known mathematician and poet, Mohsen Hashtoudi. Since the Iranian Revolution of 1979, she's been mostly living in France, writing both as a novelist and as a journalist about Iran. She has established a humanitarian association called MOHA in honour of her father. Fariba Hashtoudi is the French writer in residence at the Randall Cottage in Wellington, and she will speak at a New Zealand Society of Authors conference in support of the people of Iran in Wellington on Monday. And she's with me now. Hi, how are you? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. Thank you very much.
Where were you when the 1979 revolution happened?
In France, actually.
Did you see it coming?
Not really, but in fact, when we are out, we sometimes think that, see the situation better than the people that are inside. When the Shah is telling that Iran is an island of tranquility, we didn't believe in this. But this revolution, the way that it happened, no, I wouldn't say that we could imagine that, no.
There are some interesting reflections from people at the moment, a lot of people who recall that as young liberals and left-wingers in the 70s, mm-hmm. they were very keen for the Shah to go. Mm-hmm. You know, very anti-Shah. Who wouldn't be anti-Shah? But now they say, of course, what followed was much worse.
Yes, definitely.
Were you anti-Shah?
I am for the democracy. I'm not anti-person. Mm-hmm. I fight for ideas. And then the Shah as a person, no. But in fact, the dictator of the SAVAK, the secret police, and the dictatorship, which even though that this has nothing to do with what's going on now, I was against that, of course.
When you were in Paris, then you were studying, you were coming to the end of your PhD,
I guess.
So what, somebody rang you? You talked to your mother? What happened? How did you...
No. I wanted to go back, in fact. You know, I lost my father 2 years before the revolution. Mm. And even though that I was sent in France long before the revolution, I was a kid when I was sent in boarding school in France. But I wanted to go back because I wanted to serve my country as my father, my grandfather, all my family. And it wasn't very easy for me because I was brought up in France. I'm very spontaneous and free woman, which sometimes shocked my compatriots. But even with this, I thought, okay, I go back, I serve my country, I will do what I have to do. But when the revolution arose and I saw these Hezbollah, which is the party of God, and the savagery of the beginning of this revolution and started by, you know, bloodshed and killing people like this, I thought, and especially the anti-woman side of Mr. Khomeini, I thought it's not my place, not right now. And I stayed a little bit, and very soon my life had been completely changed. I went to writing, I went to journalism because of the revolution. I start writing against what's happening in my country because I couldn't just work in Le Louvre, you know, the museum, as an archaeologist and continue like this.
Was that what you were doing?
Yes. I was working at Le Louvre, and then I went to Sri Lanka for 2 years, perhaps to... I was sick of what was going on in Iran. It was just after the war. I had some other things to do there. I wanted to make some study on Buddhism. And when I went back to Paris, I thought I can't continue as a researcher or archaeologist or whatsoever. And I started journalism at that time.
As a matter of interest, why were you looking at Buddhism?
Because it's so opposite to all monotheist religion. And it's a way of life, which for me is the best, and it helped me a lot. It was kind of therapy for me, getting to Buddhism. I was interested in Buddhism for ages, but especially at that time, looking what was going on in my country under the name of Islam, which is not Islam. I respect all religion. And looking back at the history and seeing what Catholicism has done to the world, South America, Inquisition, in 17th century, 16th, 17th, 18th. Then I thought maybe I should change totally my way of living and get into Buddhism by practice, which I've done, and it helped me a lot. And still, when I get very depressed, which happens very often, today I'm very depressed because I heard about this, death penalty of two young, very young, my fellow compatriots. And I start in the morning by having 5 minutes, 10 minutes of meditation inside me to be able to come and talk to you.
The death penalty?
Yes, the two young Iranian had been killed. I had been executed 2 days ago.
Because?
It's said because that they are enemy of God. And there is a lot of... in the beginning, they said because they were in the uprising. Their lawyers said it's not true. They've been arrested 2 months before all the events. And finally, one of them, it's supposed to be enemy of God because he's an activist. He's supposed to be an activist for the royalist. The other one, I couldn't find out exactly the whole story today on internet. But whatsoever it is, either it's for the uprising, either if they have a tendency of being, pro-monarchist or pro-communist or whatsoever. I mean, death penalty for that. 20 years. It's absolutely horrible. And that goes on for 30 years.
When the protests happened last year after the election, mm-hmm. did you think that that was the beginning of a major change?
Oh, yes.
Do you still think that?
Yes. Yes.
Because there are those who say nothing's going to change in Iran because the opposition is not organized enough. And what does the opposition want? The opposition is full of young people who want to, get out more. There is no cohesive political force opposed to the regime in Iran?
No, it's a little bit more complicated than that. There is an inner opposition. The problem is actually that the power is not any more monolithic. Then, as long as they are fighting among themselves, that goes on, by the way, for the past 15 years. Now we see just what's happening in open, in front of everybody. But as an activist and as an activist of human rights, and that I was following that very, very closely, it's not just today. That goes on after the death of Khomeini. It started between the various faction, the fight, and now the fight is on the climax. And I don't think that is one parameter. The other parameter is that the people of Iran and the young people won't stop. Repression cannot be an answer anymore. That is my opinion. I may be wrong. But when you see in all other countries, the wall of Berlin, it didn't come in one day. It was years of protest and fed up various kind of activities then, and all of a sudden, and everybody was puzzled. You remember that, and nobody could, all over the world, everybody was completely astonished. All of a sudden, just paper, it went down. I think in Iran, the process is it's that process, but where it will go, nobody can say. The my worry is that it will be maybe very, the price will be very high, because Iran, it's a big, big country. The interest,
and they look over the border at Iraq and see what can happen.
Exactly.
When, bad thing becomes worse.
Yes, yes. I am worried. I won't say that I'm not worried, but on the other hand, I have a lot of hope, because the potential of these people, they shown the, and the... young people, they are very aware of that. And as you said, Iranian are aware that it can be worse. Then when they protest in such a civic sense, not going to the extreme, they are beaten, everything, but still they try to have a very, very pacific protest.
In 1985, you traveled secretly into Iran. You wrote about this in your first book, L'Exilé. Why did you go? How did you go?
It's difficult, you know, because I was writing about a country that I haven't seen for years, and as a journalist, I thought I can't do that. But I guess there were some more deep reasons for that. I wanted to see what is my real connection with this country, and I find out that.
And you've been away for how long? Over a decade?
Oh yes.
Yes.
Yes. And haven't seen the country since the revolution, means 79 to 86, 85, 86. And I really find out that the connection is very, very strong. I am more French or, Parisian than Iranian by the years that I've lived in France. But still, I think Iran is a very, very strong culture and a country. And at least for me, this connection is very, very strong, and I think it's a familial history which is upon my shoulder. My grandfather was a great Ayatollah who had fought for the constitution in Iran, and he didn't want religion to be involved in politics. My father, you said about him, and I think that is something that is in my blood.
So why did you have to go back? Clandestinely,
because I was at that time I had written too much about Iran already, and you have read some of my writing maybe, and I was a political asylum. I hadn't any passport.
So how did you get back in?
Through the desert of Balochistan with the smugglers, and it was very, very scary. When I went there, when people, they said, you are very courageous, I said, no, I was completely unconscious. And it's true, and very honestly, I tell you, I was really unconscious. I didn't know where I'm putting my finger. After 10 days, I was so scared about what was happening and what was saying. I wanted just to get out of the country.
Why were you so scared?
Because it was under the war, the repression. Every single day there were check in the cars and everything, because they were searching for the anti-revolutionary. At that time, there were a lot of communists still and mujahideen of the people, all kind of opponent that they were very active inside the country. Then repression, it was really something. Then you could feel it. And as a woman, my goodness, I was under the chador, and it was so difficult for me to keep this chador on my head, because I'm not, used to it. And I was all the time worried that they will come and say, your chador is back, or you don't wear it properly, or this kind of stupid things.
For all people criticize the Shah, what a lot of women say is, yes, but women were able to go to university and women were able to have a professional life. And your mother was a professor of humanities and Persian literature. Mm. Did she stay on after the revolution? What happened?
No, she was old. She was resigned.
Retired.
I'm sorry. Yeah, but on the contrary, the revolution, because of this repression, in fact, the situation of women and the struggle of women is fantastic in Iran, and they are educated. There is something that it has been, I don't know whether a mistake by the mullahs or whether they didn't know what they are doing, but they were no more civil rights for women, but they didn't take off the education and the political rights. And women actually are in the front line for the fight. Iranian women, it's absolutely fantastic what's going on among the fight of women in Iran. Then, because they had to gain their rights. The rights is not something you give. Under the Shah, the rights were coming from the top. They wanted to give the rights. The rights, you have to fight for it. And now, the rights that they are gaining, Iranian women, they won't lose it anymore, in my opinion.
Mm.
And they are doing wonderful job, actually, in Iran.
What is your organization, the association you founded, Moha, what does it do?
For years, we helped refugees, and now I am trying to continue the same thing for the education and culture. And when I go back to Paris, I hope to be able to, through the culture, between the countries, first of all, to introduced the Iranian culture widely, the actual culture of Iran, what's going on right now in, among the artists, because they're doing a wonderful work, and also to get some international artists to back the work of Iranian artists for the democracy. And by the way, the first piece that the first work that I am doing, it's here with John Ray, who is a musician in residence as well. And we are going he has done four pieces for Iran. And on Monday, on the Penn...
Society of Authors press conference.
Mm-hmm. He is going to just perform his one of the pieces for the first time. Then Moha is that.
Moha is not based in Iran in any capacity.
No, when I went 2 years ago, last year for the last time.
Did you have to sneak in again?
No, I went...
Taken off the wanted list.
I went with an Iranian passport, but with a lot of problem. All the time I had to see the secret services, and last time they have taken my passport, and I didn't know whether they will give it back to me or not. No, it's always the problem. Mm-hmm. I am under... I'm a woman that has to be watched, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I wanted, in fact, registered the foundation within Iran, and they are a lot of the student of my father and people that they respect and really adore him. They told me we will be there, but unfortunately, when I came out, all this problem has arisen, and right now, I've been told wait a little bit more and don't come back.
Not surprising, really. You say Moha is non-political, mm-hmm. but if it's fighting for education and fighting for the rights of women and fighting for secularism, then, automatically that makes it political.
Everything is political. Uh-huh. You know better than I. All depends the weapons you are using. For years, I've been very, very radical, and I was even for a struggle by arms. It's not anymore my position. I think, no, that is not the way. I changed totally the way for several reasons. Mm-hmm. And first of all, even I think the time that I've been in this state of mind, it wasn't the right solution for Iran. For nowhere, by the way, not in 21st century. Then, of course, everything is political. But again, all depends how you... I think now, I really do think, for me at least, the best weapons, it's the pen, writing. The best weapons is culture. The best weapons, it's education. And if I have to die for this, then okay. But they can't tell that she is an enemy of God or whatsoever, because I am totally independent. I don't want to get mixed up with any kind of political parties anymore, because I don't trust none of them. Even if there is a change in Iran, I will be all the time in the opposition and in non-governmental organization. I do believe that for the 21st century, we used to say that press, media was the quatrième pouvoir, the fourth power in the world. I really do believe for the 21st century, NGOs, organization will be this power.
Fueled, I imagine, by the internet.
Exactly.
I can't quite work out what's going on there politically. All three main opposition leaders seem to have accepted that Ahmadinejad is in power, and they've stopped calling for a new election on the grounds that the last one was fraudulent.
Yes, it's complicated, because I guess they have done a step backward. I open a parenthesis. I would love to talk about literature as well, if you allow me afterwards.
Yes.
But that is, I understand that, I'm here and there is a lot of interest for Iran. And for me, it's very important to talk about Iran. But literature is also very important. But in fact, I guess they have done a backward step, because as I told you, the fight gets very, very, very dangerous. As long as the other don't want to...
You mean they've been intimidated into withdrawing from the fight?
First of all, and I think some of them, they are really afraid that things goes totally in a wrong way. And then, but it doesn't mean that the fight, it's over. Mm. It's not. Karubi says, I accept such and such Mr. Ahmadinejad because the Supreme Guide had accepted him. But still, he says that the election weren't gone in a right way. There is contradiction in his statement, but I guess he is obliged to do that right now. And we'll see. And we have not to forget that 11th of February is the anniversary of the revolution. Everybody wait for a huge uprising. And very, very tough repression.
And yet at the same time, you know, the regime has a lot of support also.
Oh, a lot, I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
Nobody knows, I suppose.
I don't
know. Issue.
I don't believe that they have a lot of support. They have a kind of support. They pay very well their, you know, their supporters. But a lot among 70 millions, I don't think that this lot will be more than a couple of millions, really.
How do you feel about, I mean, there are, you know, couple of stories, presentations that the Iranian regime puts out. One of them is that everything bad is the result of, you know, the great Satan interfering with things, and that the opposition is fueled by people who are still hanging on to the Shah's time when the rich did very nicely, thank you, and most people were poor.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that line of argument?
I mean, it's, you know, this argument is nobody believes in that anymore. It's finished. You know, you are the valet of Israel. You are this and you are that. It's a joke. They hang on it because you have to hang on something when you want to go on with the repression. You know, one of these mullahs who is Jannati, who is really, really, you know, a very conservative mullahs. He just thanks on the prayer. He said thanks to the forces of to the judiciary. I don't know what. Thanks that you have hanged two young people. You should do it more. I mean, this logic. There is no logic in this. It's just pure repression and very blind repression. Nobody believes anymore that because the richest people actually in Iran are among these people, among the mullahs and their sons and their then. And the, according to their own statements, 50% of the Iranian living under the red line of poverty then. There is no logic.
And no benefit for anybody under the new regime.
No.
President Obama has said that he wants to talk with Iran. Process of engagement that doesn't seem to have come to anything because Iran hasn't been that forthcoming. Was that? Did you have hopes that it would somehow?
We had hopes if somebody like Mousavi would have come to power. Yes,
yeah.
definitely, it would have been a big change. It could have been a real big and slowly a slow change in Iran. That was a real chance for the whole region, in my opinion.
You said that you had great hopes of NGO activity changing things in Iran. Does that mean that you actually don't think that there's much of a place for governmental pressure?
No. I didn't say that in about this Iranian situation. I said that in general.
Uh-huh.
But pressure certainly will make a change, for sure. All depends, again, what you want to get out of this pressure. If the pressure is just to say to the Iranian government it's for the atomic issue and they don't care about human rights, this pressure may work, but that is not the pressure that I would love to see the result, because for me it's the democracy which has to come in. But if the pressure is just sanction, and the sanction, you know, it's worse for the Iranian people, that is not the pressure that I would love for for my country. It's quite complicated.
It is complicated. I mean, there's a lot of hand-wringing going on. I see Siemens, Europe's biggest engineering group, has pulled out of Iran.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there are about 50 German companies selling nuclear technology to Iran.
Yeah, sure. And by the way,
huge money.
Israel is selling a lot of technology for internet to Iran. That comes out. It's one of the you see. I mean, that also something that political power, they are not what they were years ago. Now it's the trust, the economic and financial trust, which leads sometimes the policy, unfortunately. Then, you know.
You are obviously occupied and preoccupied with this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Your novel writing is also about the same thing, or is it an escape for you?
No, no, not now. And it's not. My most of my novels and my writing was about Iran. As I told you, I came to writing by necessity. I had to do something for my country and at least to denounce what was going on. But now, in fact, I will get nuts if I go on like this all the time. Then these two novels that I'm working on here, it's one. It's about.
Do you always work on two novels at the time?
No, it's the first time, and it's and it helps me actually. One, it's but in fact, all the time, I would say my main characters are exile, are politics. And of course, then what's going on to human being? And then one of them treats it's a story of love, but behind that there is a Israel-Palestine conflict. I try to work on it. That is research, and the other one that I'm writing, and I have to finish it while I'm here. It's against the damages of globalization. And that is totally a French story, but with some links with Africa. And it gives me some, I can breathe a little bit, it's out of Iran. But of course, still, the message I want to give, I hope to give to my readers, it's that the world... it's not going very well, and we should be aware of it.
No, the world doesn't seem to be going very well. Globalization, has it been done wrong in your view, or should it never have been done?
Oof, difficult question. I think
because it's presented as an inexorable force, it would have happened anyway. There's nothing we can do about it. All we can do is make the most of it and go with it.
Yes, I think it would have happened. I agree with this. Again, all that there is in all phenomenon, in my opinion, there is positive things and negative things. The only thing is to try to get the positive point, I mean, and to improve the positive point and be behind the positive point and to try to avoid the negative point. I am not an expert on economy, but when I see the damages of what has happened, you know, the crisis, recent crisis, due to the globalization and the finance, which takes, you know, all the power instead of economy, that it's a negative point. When I see what internet does, as you said, that also is the globalization and you know, the network in the world. That is a positive point, because without internet, coming back, just a parenthesis, nobody would have known what's going on in Iran.
Okay.
Then in fact, again, I won't say just globalization as a word or as a phenomenon. It's totally negative. But we should be very aware that it can make a lot of harm. Then be aware on this and try to do our best to prevent that. Another issue, it's the ecology. You don't say ecology.
The environment.
Environments, yes. Then we should be aware of this. But again, what we can do about it, it's maybe little. But as long as we are aware, awareness is very important.
Which particular aspect of globalization are you looking at in your novel?
In my novel, it's how poor countries are becoming a kind of laboratory for rich country and for very, very stupid things sometimes. I am treating the cosmetics, you know, all this... dream of being all the time young and being all the time beautiful, and women have to look all the time 30 years old, even if they are 60 or 80 or whatsoever. And how one of these cosmetics, very big, very well known, is doing harm in Africa for their research and for their products. I can just tell you that, but it goes very far. And I worked on it very harsh to make it a kind of shocking novel, that it will shock people, but it's not very far from the reality. Recently, I heard, and I mentioned that in my novel, I heard that there was some killing in Peru. There is gang that they're killing people, they're killing peasant to get the fat of human body. You know that the fat, it's very important in cosmetics. And it seems the fat of human body, it's of course 10 times more efficient for some of the creams than, and it's a world network of this traffic. There were 60 people killed in Peru.
For this reason?
For this reason.
It sounds like one of those urban legends, doesn't it?
No. Yes.
You know, it sounds like...
Oh, yes, exactly.
And I went to Thailand and came back without my liver.
That's it. But it's reality. That was, I read the story in, I read the article in Le Monde, and Le Monde doesn't, you know... Can you imagine?
Le Monde doesn't make things up.
Le Monde is a serious serious newspaper, I wanted to say. But, yeah, it's horrible. I mean, it's horrible. The same thing, as you said, for the you know, that the traffic of organs in India, in Iran, actually, in most of the country, that there is no law, and you kill people to get their kidney and sell it somewhere else for millions. Then I am not very far from the reality, what I'm writing in my novels. And who pays all the time? Poor country. Thanks to their of course, the corruption of their governors and government as well. But anyhow.
I look forward to reading them. Is this the first time you've been to New Zealand?
Yes.
Sorry about the weather.
Thank you.
Usual story. Enjoy it now while you can. It's very nice to talk to you, Fariba Hashtrudi.
It was very nice. Thank you.